It's 5 o'clock, and we're going to go ahead and get started. We have lots of demos to talk about. My name is Dan Fernandez. This is Coding for Fun, building fun, cool commercial applications using the Kinect for Windows SDK. My esteemed colleague.
I'm Rick Barraza. I also work for Coding for Fun.
And we're going to have some fun here. If you didn't notice the 6-foot-tall boxing robots, we'll let you guys have some fun at the end of the session. So before we get started, though, how many people here have actually programmed or started playing around with the Kinect for Windows SDK? Okay, a few handfuls. How many of you have never programmed with the Kinect for Windows SDK? I saw the hands go, never programmed? Wait. No, I'm not stupid. I don't want to be that person.
Muggles.
I know it's a trick question, you speakers. Awesome. So we're going to go through and really talk about everything you need to build applications and talk about some of the demos you can use and some of the best practices we're using for applications as well.
A quick shout out to Brian Peek, who couldn't be here, though. I'm last minute substitute for him. Sorry, guys, I'm not as smart as Brian Peek, but he's a really good guy. I at least can talk about design, which is exactly why people come to Tech Ed for design guidance. So we'll be able to talk about some of that stuff, too.
Well, certainly for the human interaction guidelines, exactly. When we talk about Kinect. So first thing, I'm going to give you an overview of how a Kinect sensor works and some of the things, its capabilities. We'll talk about how to manage sensor state and some of the controls that exist to do that. We're going to talk about a tool called Kinect Studio, which is new in the 1.5 release. So for people that are familiar and haven't programmed 1.5, there should be a lot of new stuff for you. Face tracking, audio programming, and so on. And really, let's just jump right into it. The first thing I want to do is level set. When we're talking about Kinect, it's really two things. It's hardware and software. When we're talking hardware, there are two types. Down there is a Kinect for Xbox 360. And that controller is the controller everybody's probably familiar with. You may have it at home. It's what you can plug into your Xbox and play games. This is a Kinect-specific, Kinect for Windows hardware. It has the word Kinect instead of Xbox 360 here. And it also has something called near mode, which actually gives you a closer view of Kinect data. So you can actually be 1.3 feet away and be able to get Kinect data from that distance. One thing you can't do with the Kinect for Windows is play Xbox games. But you can, in terms of licensing, we only allow commercial deployments with the Kinect for Windows. So if you're doing something, say you're working with a retail store that has 1,000 stores and they want to put Kinect on, it has to be Kinect for Windows. But you can use dev and test for a Kinect for Xbox 360. So that's on the hardware side. On the software side, there's three things. There's the Windows runtime, and that, if you're a .NET framework developer, that's if you were redistributing a .NET application and you had the .NET framework, that's the only part that you have to redistribute. So if I want to sell my software and sell it to, say, 10,000 people, I don't need the full SDK. I just need to include the runtime in my application. For development purposes, you can use the Kinect for Windows SDK 1.5, and that includes APIs for all the Kinect data that we're going to get. And then new to 1.5 is a developer toolkit. And this includes different APIs that run on top. Think of it as a layered approach. Now that I have this Kinect data, we can actually do additional processing on top of it and do things like face tracking and track multiple faces, a number of tools and controls that we'll actually be showing.
There's also that hardware gotcha, just so that if you're getting the Kinect for Windows, it really, if you want to be a developer playing with it, just because sometimes with the power plug in the back, if you maybe you bought a Kinect for Xbox 360, but you don't see the power adapters and stuff like that. So Kinect for Windows really optimized for the developers really getting into it and creating commercial applications.
Right? It's a good point. So if you bought an Xbox 360 bundle, and meaning the Kinect was bundled in, it does not include a power cord, and it's one of these power cords. The end of it is an orange strip. You actually have to buy an additional power cord. You can get it at, I think it's MicrosoftStore.com, and look for that accessory. If you bought it a standalone, meaning it was just a box, not in a bundle, then it automatically includes the power cord. You don't need anything else.
No.
Okay, so let's talk quickly about the Kinect sensor itself. So this is kind of like the inside view of what a Kinect sensor is. And the first thing we see is the IR emitter. So this is actually projecting an infrared, a known infrared pattern, a pattern of data. And we know that using the IR depth sensor, we know that when there's distortions in that known pattern, we can use that to measure the distortion and actually determine distance based on the distortion of that data. So again, we send out data, and we read that data and look at the distortion of that known pattern that we're sending out. And from that, we can actually calculate things like distance. In the middle is a color sensor, and that's just a color image camera. So it's not a video stream, but rather a 640 by 480, 30 frames per second sending of images. You can also tilt a Kinect, which we'll talk about a little bit later. And there's a microphone array. So even just installing the SDK or the runtime and plugging this in, it's a great microphone array. It'll mount as a normal microphone array. Everybody knows Windows Sound Recorder. You can use it for Windows Sound Recorder. The built-in grammar tools that are built into Windows, you can do dictation via Windows using those. It's just a great microphone, not having anything else to do with it. And we'll talk about some of the capabilities that are unique for audio a bit later.
Since it's an array, not just a single microphone, the fact that it's an array will give you a lot of really cool things to do. We have a whole section on it coming up.
Yeah, and the point is, from a developer perspective, what's going to happen is via a USB cable, we are going to send those color images and depth data for every pixel over the USB. Now, what's happening is skeletal data, which is skeletal tracking, is a very one of the most interesting parts of the Kinect sensor, is actually happening on the laptop. So we take that raw depth data and we build skeletons on it. You as a developer don't need to worry about it, but it's good to know what's actually going on under the covers and where the processing is taking place. So skeletal processing is actually happening on the laptop. Same with if you're doing any effects like acoustic echo cancellation in terms of audio, and that's where, like, imagine if you're playing a game like Halo and the game has background sound, you can actually remove that background sound. All that is happening on the laptop and not happening on the sensor itself.
Which is one of the big advantages on using the official Kinect SDKs that we're talking about here. There are other libraries that have just been kind of capturing the signal right off of the USB, but it's all of that data that's in the software that that really provides that leverage for commercial applications.
Exactly.
Like
okay, so just a real quick, what can the Kinect camera do? We're talking 43.5 degrees, and we can programmatically set the elevation angle. So there's an API, just set elevation angle, and it's plus or minus 27 degrees. There is an accelerometer on it, so in case you have to do something like this, your angle will be obviously off. Zero is when it's perfectly flat, so just something to keep in mind. And then 57.5 degrees horizontal. Okay, so Kinect API basics. When we start talking about using the API, there's a couple of common things we're going to want to do, and that's managing Kinect state. So taking a step back, if we think about what our monster application is, and when I say monster, is what's the craziest we could do, is let's say we have a machine that has four USB controllers, four separate USB controllers. We can plug four different Kinects into each USB controller, and we can start a process for each of those four apps. And what that allows us to do is actually track eight skeletons, assuming you have enough in a beefy CPU. And that's kind of the uppermost maximum of what you can do, which is tracking eight skeletons and get data from four Kinects at the same time. To handle that, what you can actually do is use Kinect state and pull the Kinect sensors, find out what the status of Kinect is, and determine which Kinect you want to use for which application. So you can imagine an application that has north, south, east, west. You can map each Kinect to a specific application. You can see if one has been disconnected or one doesn't have its power in, and so on. Then you turn on specific features for that Kinect. So you just say color stream.enable, for example. So to actually get data, there's two ways to do it. One is via events, which we're probably all familiar with. And there's a color stream, color frame ready, depth frame ready, skeleton frame ready, or an all frames ready. I would suggest using all frames ready as sort of the default answer. And what that allows you to do is it waits until color, depth, and skeleton are actually aligned on the same frame. So if I need to map something in skeleton space to color space, I'll know that they're all firing at the same time versus these events firing asynchronously, where they may be a little off by, say, 15 milliseconds and something looks a little off. So by having all frames ready, we wait for all three to be synchronized, if you will, and then send it back. So the other one is via polling. So if you're building XNA applications, you're going to call open next frame. And that's in XNA, there's a 30 frames per second game loop, and it's just looping. We're going to call open next frame in that game loop.
So again, to simplify it down, like for design developers like me, if I'm using C# or WPF, I'm using the all frames ready. If it's XNA or C++, it'll be the polling method.
Yep. And actually, for C++, I think there are other ways to get
that's
out
right.
Of it.
That's right.
So. Okay, so this is a Connect talk, so we need to show demos.
Absolutely.
Our first demos, we're gonna crescendo and build up slowly. I just want to show you how to build your first Hello World application. And again, I'm just using C# Express here.
From Hello World to Killer Robots in 75 minutes. That's pretty good.
That's exactly it. That's what we should have named it. Okay, so where were you? Okay, so I have a solution here. And the one thing I've done, and I'm just going to zoom in, we have added the Microsoft Connect. When you install the SDK, you get Microsoft.connect, and you also get Microsoft.samples.connect.wpfviewers, if you can see that label there. So, and what these are built-in controls that help you visualize the data from your Connect. So by doing this, I get these nice toolbox controls. Everybody's familiar with dragging and dropping a control. They're going to drag and drop a color viewer, add one camera, add a depth viewer, another camera. Add these two controls, and just make sure they're both selected. We'll set this to width of 320, height of 240, just so they're both the same height and width.
That's one of the two default sizes that the Connect comes out with 320, 240. It also can shoot out to
640 by 480.
640 by 480.
And slower frames at 1024 by 768 right. As well. Okay, so we have two controls. Let's save, and we'll jump into our code behind. Now, for our window loaded, let's full screen this. Can you all read it in the back? You people in the back, can you read? Yes? Okay. So, first thing we're going to do, and I should actually, even before we get started, we do have references to the libraries directly here. So, Connect, Sensor, let's scroll you down, Sensor, equals, now Connect Sensor has a collection of sensors, and this is just the simple way to do it, which is, just get the first one. I'm not even going to check if it, I could do something like check if it's connected and then do it. Just for simplicity's sake, get the first sensor. Now that I have the first Connect sensor plugged into this laptop, I'm going to create a Connect sensor manager. And this class is used by the WPF viewers and the manager class. And it's used so that you can do easy data binding. It has a Connect sensor property equals sensor. Okay. So we had a Connect color viewer 1 dot, and it's looking for a sensor manager equals manager. Connect depth viewer 1 dot, and it's the exact same line of code. So when our window loads, we get the first Connect. We build this Connect sensor manager, and we set that to the sensor, and then we both map those two. And let's try and break something and see what happens. Awesome. Okay, so why don't you...
sure, I will demo.
Oh, hey. All right, let's. We have a Connect here. Awesome. So what you see here is the depth camera below, the color camera in front. We didn't have to do a lot of code to do the processing. These are there's built-in other controls to be able to do this. Sort of a real basic example. And it's important... what we're going to do is just show some of the ways that we can actually go a little lower level. So the API itself, these are pre-built sample controls. But when we want to access the lower level data, that's what we're going to show next. And what I'm going to do is go back to our page, delete these controls, and then manually show what the API returns. Uh-oh. Boxing Robot approves. I love Boxing Robot. He's great at dinner. Okay. So starting over here, and actually I'll just delete this. And for the sake of time, I'm going to actually use some snippets. And one of the things to keep in mind is For those of you who have never done WPF graphics programming, if you've done WPF graphics programming, maybe this will be repetitive for you. But if not, I'm going to kind of walk through some of the codes in terms of what's going on. Let me just finish copy-pasting our window loaded event here. Because as you see, if we're manually doing this data, there is quite a bit of stuff. So we have our four variables. Image size, that's going to be how big the image we're going to create is. So in our case, it'll be 640 by 480. Color data, the Connect API returns an array of bytes. And those bytes follow a specific format. That format is called BGR, blue, green, red, and then an empty. So to read that data out, we're going to dump all the data during that all frames ready event into a color data array. Stride is kind of a fancy way to say how much for each pixel on the screen, how much data do you need? And the data for that application is the width of the image, and then for each pixel times 4.
Now this isn't Connect specific. This is if you do a lot of image programming WPF or C#, right? This is common code. It's things like Stride and
absolutely. But for people that haven't done this programming, just want to make, how many people have done WPF writable bitmap programming before? Okay, so for some of you, this is new. But what I want to show, and what we didn't have before, is in that control, we didn't have to turn on features. The reason why is because by setting that Connect Sensor Manager, that control itself can control what events it listens to for Connect. Now that we're doing it, we need to turn on features. And we can say .enable, and then we can actually get color image format and choose what format image we want. And you know, for our sake, we'll just do a 640 by 480 image. Our image size, we're going to ask what is the color stream width and height. So now we know it's a 640 by 480 image. And then every pixel is 640 times 4 because each pixel has those representations of the color. And there's a nice helper property here that lets us know the data length as well. And again, I go back to easy mode for color images. Chances are you don't need to do all this, but this is what you would need to do in terms of writing directly to the API. And we're going to create a new writable bitmap using the pixel format BGR32. There is also an BGRA, which has an alpha transparency, which may be something interesting if you want to do, for example, like actually use alpha transparency to do some like a green screen effect, where I only care about the pixels that represent the person and make everything else transparent, so they're looking at the weather, for example. And then we set the image source to the color bitmap. So we've initialized the four variables here, and now we're going to call all frames ready. And just for simplicity, I'm going to copy paste. And this is where it's going to be a very common practice for all different parts. Color, depth, skeleton are going to all use this same pattern. So all frames ready is firing at 30 frames per second. So you as a developer, keep in mind what you're doing in there because it will be graphics intensive and processing intensive. So the first thing is we want to make sure we're cleaning up after ourselves. So we're using a using statement that will automatically dispose of this color image frame. In here, there could be a scenario where you actually drop a frame. So for example, you're at work and you accidentally start Diablo. All of a sudden, this application is going to drop color frames. OK, nobody plays Diablo? No? My homies? Yeah? All right, a couple of you. All right, thank you. Good. I play with my wife, which is a horrible thing. So I give her all my gems. It's just like real life.
Just like real life.
It's sad but true. OK, color pixel data, copy pixel data. What we're doing is going through this color frame, and it populates that color data. So now we have a massive array of color data, which is in a BGR empty, BGR empty, BGR empty, and so on. And now we use color bitmap to write pixels, giving it the size, the color, the stride, and all that. So with any luck, we'll have the exact same image. So we did a lot of code. I showed you the easy mode to do it first, but you get the idea. And the big thing to take away here from a programming perspective is all frames ready. So when you're in All Frames Ready, make sure that you're being smart about utilizing your resources. Anything that you can only set up once, put it up at the top of your code. And then just realize, make sure you're cleaning up after yourself. And for example, instead of just building a new image, we're going to use a writable bitmap, which is designed to have its pixels cleaned out every time. So there's our basic demo, and we'll switch back to PowerPoint. Okay.
Or they could have just dragged the controls like you first showed and bound to a manager and been done with it.
Yeah, exactly. So it always depends, but just realize what's going on. And I would say you can always use a combination of both. Mm-hmm. Okay, so depth data. So color was those BGR representing a pixel. Depth isn't that. Depth is distance for every pixel. So I can say distance, 0, 0, how far away are you from the Kinect camera, and what player index? So I can actually know what person that pixel represents. That's 320 by 240, so 76,800 pixels, as an example of distances that you will get back. That distance is measured in millimeters, so that's 6.56 feet for us Americans. You can identify which player index is shown. And if you look at the actual, if you were to map out what the variable is, it's a 16-bit short, so you can see the distance and then the player index written in the actual variable type. And we'll get, for every single pixel, we'll get that data back. Another thing to keep in mind, when you're talking Kinect for Windows, you can now turn on near mode and get 1.3 feet away, which if you think about your monitor, you typically want your monitor at least a foot away or 1.3 feet. So you can actually get data, depth data, or even seated skeletal tracking that we'll talk about a little later using near mode. So it makes it an experience where you could be, say, in front of your computer and actually have your Kinect there and build an application for that. Just remember in terms of near mode that the physical limit, 9.8 feet, is moved in because in default it's 13.1. So you get a little more distance back on the default. So when we first shipped Kinect, the Kinect beta, anytime we didn't know the distance, we returned -1. And what happens is there's a lot of times when we don't know the distance. So green is the only time we knew the distance, and we never knew if something was too close, too far, or what. So what we decided to do is actually map this out and tell you. Even though we can't tell you the distance, we know that it's too far away or it's too near. And you can actually query that, and you can see the different modes and how that affects too far. And there may be some, for example, where we still don't know the distance, and that could be either very close or very far away. All right, so depth formulas. What we're talking about here is a number of formulas to how we get data, party on the data that is distance data. Because the distance data is returned as a single dimension array, that means you're probably going to have to do a couple things. Like, for example, if I wanted the midpoint of 320 by 240, which is 160, 120, and say, what is the depth for that? What is the distance from the camera? There's a couple formulas, which is width times y plus x to be able to get that out. And the index would be 38,560. Or for get x and y, and again, you all can review this afterwards. But the key thing is we're going to be using the distance and player formula in our next demo. And those are ways that you can actually take that short and do a bit shifting or bitwise and to be able to read out what player it is and what distance it is. All right, so let's go into demos. All right. So our next demo here. What we're going to do is translate distance. How would we visualize distance? Well, what we're going to do is, and I'll show you the application first, so you can see it in action. With any luck, it'll actually work. We are going to visualize distance in three ways. So as we get within 900 millimeters, it's blue. And then we hit a certain barrier, we turn to green. And then that really far barrier, see my hand at some point, turn into this wall of red. So what we can do is, using that distance data, determine how we want to visualize the data that Kinect is spitting out for us. As just one example for partying on depth data. So another example would be if you were doing something like you wanted to add this to the front of a device and do more like a radar. So for example, I want to know before I hit into something, what is the closest option, maybe to color that differently or give some sort of visual cue or indicator that there is something there that I should not hit that isn't necessarily a human skeleton.
For example, if somebody put a Kinect on the front bumper of a car.
Much later. Okay, so I'm just going to jump into code. And one of the things I wanted to show before we get started is we're using another control called Kinect Sensor Chooser. And I'll just, can you all read that? Yeah. Okay. If not, let me know. So Sensor Chooser, what that allows us to do is rather than mapping to that first array, we can actually do things like handle connections and the Kinect state a lot better. So we set up a Kinect Sensor Chooser, and there is a UI control as well that I'll want you to look at when we start the application again. And there's a Kinect change event. So when we get a Kinect change event, there's an old sensor that we make sure to stop. And then on the new sensor, that's where we start enabling our features. So when an application first runs and I'm not changing a Kinect, you'll be able to see that I want to turn on the depth stream, a skeleton stream, and all frames ready. And just like before, we're using a writable bitmap and the stride and all that stuff that you're probably already familiar with. Now, for all frames ready, just like before, we do a using for that frame, open the depth frame, and if it's null, we do nothing. Otherwise, we're using generate colored bytes, and this is where we're actually going to decide, based on the distance, how to color those pixels. So here's the raw data from Kinect, which is that raw depth data. And we have to know we're going to have 4 pixels times the height and width. And then how do we want to write that in? BGR format, blue is always first, green is second, red is third. And now we have a for loop. And think of this as a source and destination. So our source is the depth data. So at 0.00, what is the distance? And based on that distance, I want to write 4 colors to our destination, the blue, green, red, to colorize that. We get the player data. We get the depth data. And now this is what we're doing. We're looking at if you are less than or equal to 900 millimeters, then I want you to color all blue. If we are between 2.9 feet and 6.56 feet, all green. And then we're going to do all red. So one thing I want to do is you can actually do things, for example, like calculate intensity from depth. And what that's going to do is grayscale everything. So instead of having all one out, we're going to apply it equally, and that'll give a grayscale effect where the color will actually change shades of gray using this quick formula. Okay, so let's just run this and look for the quick sensor chooser UI right here in the corner. It lets us know that everything's all set. And now, so as we move forward, we see the color of gray change by applying that same intensity. Okay.
So one practical application from this, Dan previously had mentioned green screening when we were talking about alpha. The implication was it's green screen but without the green screen. So if you can get that, since you know where the body is, you can cut everything out. So it's not green screening as in they have to stand in front of a color and everything's done through color. It can actually see where the torsos are, simply pop those pixels out and get rid of everything else. So,
great. All right, so let's get to skeletal tracking. So when we're talking about skeletal tracking, there's a maximum of 2 skeletons per connect, as I mentioned before, 6 player proposals. So when you think about an application, how do I know which person should be skeleton tracked? That's something you as a developer can choose or let the Kinect choose. Kinect tends to default to whoever's closest to the sensor. But you can, for example, do things like, hey, I have 6 people. Keep looping through until somebody has their hand up. And when somebody has their hand up, they should be the selected player. Another thing we should talk about is this difference between seated and default. So by default, we actually have 20 joints. And that's the location of X, Y, Z of, say, for example, your hip, your knee, and so on. For seated, we only get the top 10 joints. And we'll talk about the position of those. But that's kind of at a high level some of the things you want to think about for skeletal tracking for user selection.
And seated is new to 1.5, because that's something that's been on our wish list since Kinect first came out. So seated for a lot of us, that's a really big deal because those are the experiences we were really looking for.
I love it. Love it. Okay. Joints in meters from camera. When we talk about coordinates, so let's say, for example, we had our hand. It's in meters from camera, that distance from the camera. And one thing to keep in mind is the negative and positive. So if you see negative is left, positive is right. So you can actually be negative away and that center point being directly on the connect. So joint tracking and smoothing. So each joint has an associated tracking state. So it can be tracked, not tracked, or inferred. And what inferred means is it's occluded, clipped, low confidence. And just if you see in that image, for example, that person's hand is getting clipped off and the connect isn't able to see it. It may, for example, be inferred, and based on the position, here's where we think it is. If you're right on the edge of that camera, I'm inferring its position, but I'm not fully tracking it. And you can do things, for example, like tell the user, say, for example, change the elevation angle if the person's tall based on that situation, or tell the user, hey, move back if it's somebody that gets excited and they're too close and now we're moving joints. You can do it on a per joint basis, or you can do it on an entire skeleton. And for example, the skeleton.clipped edges will tell you that the top is being cut off. Now, transverse smooth parameters, what that allows us to do is we actually include an algorithm to do a double exponential smoothing directly in the Connect SDK. So you turn on those features, and you'll see sometimes you get a jitter when following specific joints. What this allows you to do is actually smooth it out. So as a simple example, if you think about what a weighted average is, if I know the position of my hand and I start moving it, and if by chance the Connect thinks it's over here one time, because I have a bunch of readings at this position, it may only move up a little as opposed to moving it directly and saying, hey, if this is a cursor, and we'll show this in an example, you should follow the hand directly. Smoothing takes all the previous data and applies that to determine where we should place a joint position. Another thing to keep in mind is fatigue kills gestures, especially if you're building business applications. If you have something, for example, like that's a game, that's a yoga game, yes, you want to make people suffer and do a... Yeah, I love yoga.
Exactly.
And into positions, and that's the design. But you can imagine something where you're building an application, and maybe it's a line of business application to swipe through PowerPoint or whatever. You really don't want the person to have to walk and forth. And one of the things we've done is actually build a coding for fun scale to extension method that makes it a lot easier. And you design your hitbox. How far do you want the person mm-hmm. to move their hand to interact with your application?
Yeah, and doing it at the commercial level, that's a perfect example of something that when you're playing with it kind of at a hobbyist level, a lot of times you don't think about that, but as soon as you go commercial and you're testing, having that extra step of defining it so that if you want somebody to go across the screen, they're not actually going all the way, you get to have those more elegant, graceful gestures out.
Oh, yeah, they will hate you when you have exactly. to walk 3 feet to go drag it back. Mm. Okay, so let's get into some slightly more fun demos here now that we've been processing byte arrays. Slowly start working up. So skeletal tracking. What I want to do is just show on our connect change event, now we're adding a skeleton stream and enabling our skeleton stream. And we're also using a couple other data. So I actually want to jump to our all frames ready event. We're going to build a color image, but we're going to use that same pattern we've shown before. For a skeleton frame, open the skeleton frame, check if it's null, and then copy the data. So every time this runs, and I'll tell you the story, it was 2 a.m. when the Connect SDK beta was going out, and I had a breakpoint, and I was trying to find out why it wasn't following a skeleton, and what it showed was on my debugger that there were 6 skeletons in my office, which I don't, if you can search for Connect Ghost, and you'll find a ton of YouTube videos on people saying there was something tracked right next to me, and it freaked me out. So just so you know, as a developer, and you don't tinkle, is the professional term, it will always return 6. It will always return 6. So don't be like Dan. So we are going to make sure to get the first skeleton that is tracked. So The next thing we're going to do is use this to map a skeleton point. So I know the position XYZ of skeleton, and I want to map it to a color position, meaning where is that skeleton joint on a color image and put something on top of it. So we can read a current skeleton has a list of joints, and it can be those 20 joints, head, and all the ones you saw on the slide, and its position. And the one thing I do need to tell it is the color stream format, whether it was 320 or 640 by 480, so it maps to the right place. Same thing with two hands. So we have hand left, hand right. And I have a method called move to camera position. And what I've done is on this UI is I have a left ellipse, a right ellipse, and something I'm going to put on my head. And we're going to use these to determine where those joints are. And we're going to use this map, move to camera position. Let me just jump to this. And we're going to use set left and set top. And that's just going to move the position. And the width divided by 2 is only because we want, instead of the joint to be right at the top left corner, it'd be a lot nicer if it was in the middle. So if we have, for example, an ellipse, and we tell it to set left, set top, and don't do that, it'd be at the top left of the corner, while we want it centered directly on top of the joint. So we use the midpoint of that element. OK, let's just show what this looks like first. OK, there's our sensor chooser. And oh, yeah. Awesome. So I haven't done it, and I really need to find time. But I just want to have like a mustacher app that just allows you to do swipes and change his mustaches. One thing is just maybe if you start looking at my hands, we're not using smoothing at all. So it follows very quickly my position of my hands. And sometimes you'll see like a jitter, like it'll just randomly kind of lose itself or move around. And what I'm going to do is show the before and after. We're going to turn on skeletal smoothing. And I can, yeah, OK, so I can't actually lose it. But you'll see that it's really fast. And as you're building applications, depending on what your application is, you may want to not use smoothing. For example, this will follow me around very quickly. If I'm doing an application that requires fast movement, you don't want it to feel like it's lagging. So let me jump out of here. And what we're going to do is just jump back to the top of our file, and I'll full screen this. And back here, we have a set of transform smooth parameters. And you can play with this depending on what your application actually needs. I personally like this one. It's like Butta. And Control KU. And all I've done is instead of doing the enable, I'm now sending in parameters to that double exponential smoothing. And the difference here is now it almost feels like I have yo-yos. Ah. Isn't this relaxing? So imagine, though, this is a sword game. I'm like, wow, I feel like a little bit of latency. Like, you know, it isn't great. So it really depends. And you can play with these parameters and decide how you want to move it. And I can kind of get away from this. But if I'm using this as a cursor, you do want a smooth experience for cursor. And speaking of cursor, because it is a common scenario, imagine I'm mapping to the color. What if I want to hit that button, that one? Right? I'm stuck. There's no way for me to do this because I'm mapping to the color point. What I'm going to do is show you how we can use that scale to button. And this is scale to method to be able to hit our hover button. So to do this, we're going to jump back into the all frames ready. And let's go to definition. So instead of moving to a camera position, which maps exactly to where that joint is on a body, I want to scale a position. I'll just do this for the left and right hand here. So what this is going to do, and I'll show it in just 2 seconds, we'll jump to it. Actually, before we do, I want to show our UX power button. So one of the things we wanted to do was just have a real simple button that works similar to, say, Kinect applications maybe you have before, where you put something over, and there's a timer starts. And that timer, you know, if you keep your hand, the midpoint of that hand in there, then it'll activate a button, and you'll get a button click event. So for you as a developer, rather than building your own, we've built one that you can skin. And this is actually in the Coding for Fun toolkit. Let me just show this quickly. It's our hover button. Your time interval how long do you need to hover over that button? This is 1,200 milliseconds for it to activate the button. And then you can swap out the images. And of course, it is open source, so you can feel free to party on it as well. So what we want to do is, and I won't show the code for this, but the quick idea is if that right ellipse is on top of that power button, then I want you to do a cool hovering effect. Otherwise, go back and do a release. And let's just show that. So that's what happens when we move our button over. And now our scale position, we're using a scale to extension method. So what this is now saying is, and I think our dimensions are 1366 by 768. I think that's right. What this allows us to do is design the bounding box. So rather than me having to stretch, you can imagine if we weren't doing this, we'd have to stretch all the way in a cursor application to hit the left corners. Now what this is going to do is make it a lot smaller. And you can, of course, tweak these values. The higher the number, the smaller the hitbox you need. So let's try this one more time. And now you notice they're not on me. They're actually, there's my left hand. So if I want to go to the corner, this is kind of, this doesn't feel too bad. And say go to the far corner there. I have about that much in terms of what I actually need to move to hit the side. And now let's just show the button. And just, you know, turning our button on and off. You see that hover animation go through. So just a simple thing to keep in mind, don't make your apps annoying. And you can always, I know, you have to tell people that. It's so weird.
Yep.
Okay.
So I agree.
So what I want to do is turn things over to Rick, and I'm going to switch over to 7.
Yep.
To show Connect Studio.
So before we do, let me launch this application here. This also comes with the, oops. I need your Kinect, because one of the robots has mine, and I'm not going to take it from them.
You never want to steal a Kinect from a robot. Okay, this is you. Yeah.
Plug and play. Look at that. So as a...
Can we use
there we go. When you install, so while this is loading up, when you install Kinect, ooh, freaked me. Wasn't sure what I was looking at there for a second. when you install Kinect, so you guys know, it's going to be over here. You'll come into Program Files, and then it's going to be under Microsoft SDKs. Then you'll have Kinect. Now, when you come into here, here's the developer toolkit that we've been talking about. So up until now, everything has been the basics. I know it's been a whirlwind tour. We're trying to get to the cool demos, and I think we're going to be getting to those right now. But we started off, get a Kinect, and right away you can drag and drop, attach it to a manager, 2 lines of code, and you're good to go. As soon as you want to start getting into commercial applications or diving deeper, you're going to have to figure out how to interact with image data. So that's why we spent some time doing that, right? The easiest image data, because there's 3 things here, was the colors. And so that was the first demo we did. Then the next thing you can get, besides just the regular camera, is the depth data, which also brings you player index. And then on top of that, the final thing is actually working with skeletal data. Once you get the developer toolkit, they have a lot of fantastic samples that will really take your code to the next level based on what language you want, C#, C++. But what we'll also be showing is they have some really awesome tools, including this one called Kinect Studio. So first, let's explain what this is. This is one of the samples that you get, so you can see the code for it. And there's no more code walkthroughs, by the way. From here on out, I think we're all just showing stuff. So you can load up the application. This is one of the samples called Kinect Explorer, and just like we showed with Dan, you can see there's the RGB when I'm not tracking skeleton right here. And then up in the corner, there's a sample of the depth data, what it's coming at, and then on top of that, we're overlaying the skeleton. So if you want kind of a full soup to nuts sample at a very good level of code, open up Kinect Explorer and go through their code. It'll show you how to do everything we've talked about in a very a specific way.
And the cool thing about this is it actually includes all the WPF visualizer controls, those drag and drop controls. If you're looking at how to use them, they're all included in here.
Yeah, so this is pretty much like the main sample general sample to go in, and from here hit all the other samples. But one thing you start doing when you start building a real application with this for once is you'll be coding, and then you'll have to get up out of your chair, and you'll have to walk back, and you have to do something like this, and then you have to go back and code. And if you do that for 8 hours a day, right?
Or it's the walk of shame.
It is.
It's the walk. Oh, God. Yeah. Oh, I didn't restart. Yeah. Oh, God.
Yeah. And you work from home, and your kids are laughing at you because you got to get up and you got to do everything. So one of the best tools, and it's pretty much my favorite practical tool that has come out with 1.5, it's called Connect Studio right here. And what Connect Studio will actually do is it opens up and it lets you record your gestures one time and play it back. So let me demo that really quick. Again, this is Connect Explorer as a sample. Instead of me coming up and playing all the time, I can just launch Connect, Connect Studio. The one gotcha you have is when you launch Connect Studio, you have to launch it at the same level of elevated permissions as your application. So my C# Studio is running in admin mode. If I just run it, it won't find it. So I have to run Connect Studio at the same level of elevation. So I have to run this as admin. Once I run the studio, it'll pop up. And the first thing it does is look for an application running Connect. Since we have Connect Explorer running, it says, is this the one? I say, yeah, connect to that. And at this point, Connect Studio is now basically sitting in on the data that's coming in. So if I wanted to record something, I can record. Now that it's recording, I'll come in, I'll do the gestures, do my depth, then it'll pop in, kind of freak me out. So I'm done, I come back. And then later on, that's all I have to do. I'd be able to play it back.
Wait for it.
Yeah.
Wait for it. Yeah.
Now, for here, a couple cool things. I can save this. And then later on, because that's really the important part. If it was just playing back, but when you're really building a Connect application, you're constantly stopping, debugging. So if I stop this instance of Connect Explorer, came back to it, you know, tweaked around my code a little bit, and then I wanted to run it again. From the Connect Studio, I would just wait until this guy pops up. Once it pops up, I simply reconnect. It finds it again. I connect again. And then right off the bat, yay, I'm able to play. I'm able to play it, and I'm also able to loop it if I want. By default, it's continuous looping. Nice. Now I have that on my hard drive for all future presentations.
That's wonderful.
Again, it's a little thing, but once you start doing this at a professional level, you're in an agency or whatever, this one tool is a lifesaver by itself. So it's one of my favorite parts of 1.5.
Sweet.
Back to you.
All right. Let's. All right. So as we start thinking about how we roll all these different features together, we found a use in our offices, and this was Connect as an office monitor. So what we noticed was, you know, we have our offices, and you know, I'm sure some of you work in cubes. Is people will be in your business when you're not there. They will. We find, you know, if you have Connect, you can actually record and find people doing it. And what we wanted was a deterrent. So we built a Connect-enabled deterrent. So what we're going to do is put our little Connect on top of here.
Innocent Connect.
Innocent, little friendly innocent Connect. And what I'm going to do is this is a hacked Nerf gun. So you go to Toys R Us, you buy a Nerf gun. And
You go to Toys R Us and expense a Nerf gun.
Oh,
there's a difference.
I love our jobs. It's funny because it's true. What's the Coding for Fun motto?
Safety third, awesome first. There's no second place.
That's right. So you open one of these guns and you start cutting wires until you realize what actually turns this on. So, and then you take that into a relay, and so it's you push it down so it's always firing and connecting it. So a relay, what it acts is electrical signal that you can program via USB via a device called fidgets. So you can tell that signal when to turn on. And this is great, for example, if you want to hack those really annoying like holiday, like dancing Santa Claus, and just make it go constantly. It's hilarious. What I'm going to do is also use a pan. So this can pan itself as well. And well, I hope that wasn't important. I'm going to try and run here. And we got to give a couple seconds for the hardware to kind of initialize.
You won't see right away, will it?
We see some hardware initializing. And system ready. And stay on target. All right, let's try a little voodoo debugging, which is called, I'm just going to rebuild and run again.
Yeah, it's the same one we've been using, right? USB is plugged in.
Let's make sure it is plugged in. All right, let's make sure this thing is on power, which is probably important as well.
Thank you. Nice.
Could you leave your resume at the door? Our Kinect demo needs Kinect.
Might.
This is... So the point is, it wasn't the code, it was the bad user. Okay, it's still not going to work, and then you can blame me. All right, let's give this a second.
There you go.
All right, let's make sure.
Wait, put on your screen. Can you put it on your screen so they can see?
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. Okay.
So this would be in your office, for example.
So... That's lovely. And we actually have this about a foot down, so it ends up right here. And I wish I was joking. So I don't know if you can all can tell, that gun is rotating slowly and just following me around. I was coming here to return a book. I wasn't going to take anything.
The candy that you leave on your desk that everybody wants to steal all the time.
Absolutely. So what we're going to do is just walk a little closer, and 1.5 is the magic distance here. Awesome. You know when they say take a bullet for the team? And, of course, we can relive the glory by actually recording this. Oh, yeah. Okay, that one hurt. Look at that. And have you sent to Twitter? You can know when people are in your office and messing with your stuff. So definitely a lot of fun stuff. And this is, again, an open source example that you all will be able to play with as well.
Where is off coding for fun? Then go to codingforfun.com, right?
Yes. So let's switch to PowerPoint as well. And the best example that I found on the internet for this was actually an exec who left his office, and he came back to this. So this was on Reddit. And I tell you, they're not going to do that in my office. I'll tell you that.
Too late.
All right. Challenge accepted. Oh, this is terrible. Okay, so the other thing that we've done is expose Kinect as a socket service. So the idea is we have great data that goes via USB to a PC. It's on that PC. What we want to do is then expose that PC and build a service that can be consumed so it's over the network. And the idea behind this is something called codename Project Detroit. How many of you have ever heard of Project Detroit before? A handful of folks. And the car is actually by registration as well. So this was something we partnered with West Coast Customs to build a custom car using a bunch of Microsoft technology. So if you look closely, and I'll try and put a cursor on it, that's actually a Kinect in the front. Yep. So as Rick was talking about, being able to use that depth data and actually be able to tell, imagine you're pulling into your garage, you don't want to hit something, you never see front view cameras, now we can actually have a front view camera. And we expose this via socket service. So that means via a Windows phone application, we can read data and see a live feed of either skeletal data, color data, mm-hmm. depth data. And probably the coolest part is, since we do have a Viper Smart Start system, we can actually, if our alarm ever goes off, say we're in line at Starbucks, we can go to the live view, listen to what people are saying in front of our car, and if you
know where it's coming from.
Know where it's coming from, and then we can switch cameras, of course. There's a sound effect. We can actually talk back through the car and say, please step away from the car, which is hilarious.
Yeah. And you also have like a very deep, monstrous, please step away from the car, please, which is very, very cool.
Or the high pitch, which kind of sounds like Kit. So it's like, Michael, here's your car. Get away. Yeah. That's my kid. No, okay, no one's from the 80s. That's cool. That's cool. No one likes my imitations. Another key point to mention is this is available for your Windows RT. Yeah. So if you're using Windows 8, because this is over a network, you can actually read this data, whether it's there may be some issues in terms of from a store policy to be able to read local host data from your local machine, but certainly from other machines as well. So you can actually see that data on a Windows tablet, because a lot of people have been asking, what's one way I can use it in a Metro-style application to be able to read Kinect data? This is available. And there's just client libraries to make it really, really easy, so you don't have to worry about networking.
And that's available already, right? Didn't Brian Peek, you guys push that up already, right?
I think he's pushing it up. He was going to push it up this week. But the other versions are available now. Okay, so face tracking. One of the new features for 1.5 is something called face tracking. That's real-time tracking of multiple faces. And this is, again, in the Developer Studio, not in the Kinect SDK. It includes 2D, 3D mesh and points. So you can do things, for example, like there's an enumeration of lip upper, for example, and know where that point is at 30 frames per second. So you can decide what you want to do there, for example. Since you know the position, you can kind of start doing an even better version of mapping a mustache on whoever you want.
A three-dimensional mustache, which is even better.
Three-dimensional mustache, exactly. So when you turn, it's accurate. There's 3D head pose, which I'll talk about on the next slide, and then animation units. So for those of you who have ever done 3D modeling, animation units are something common there, and there's a number of animation units included in this. And what this allows you to do, it follows the Candide 3 model of animation units, which give you, for example, like a jaw lower, which is when your mouth is closed, it's at 0. When it's open, it's like 1 is sort of the exact. Or there's a frown one. I know what you're going to do with this video, and I don't like it. Or the frown. So you can actually see somebody and do things, for example, that we haven't thought about before, which is have your application react to somebody's reaction. So, for example, if they're inquisitive, you can say, like, what's going on? And you can make Clippy that much more annoying.
Better.
And we won't be getting into a lot of the detail on 3D modeling, but one of the cool features is 3D head pose. And you can think of yourself as being able to use your head as a cursor. So we can do things like roll, yaw, which is turning left and right, and pitch. And let's just show what that looks like in action. So the first thing I'm going to do is sort of a hello world for face rotation. So let me just do a quick demo, and we'll show, make sure the Kinect is plugged in, and just show this. And this is just screen. You guys don't see how awesome this is? Let's see. So what I'm doing is, and I got to kind of get in this straight, is I have an image, and all I'm doing is just a simple translate transform. So you can imagine like a Forza game, where I turn a little to the left and the screen actually moves with me. Mm-hmm. So based on my movement, I'm doing a very simple translate transform based on that yaw. So, and of course, I can do things like turn off. And again, this is sort of like a hello world example, but it shows the kinds of things you could do. For example, I can use my head and make really just precise movements to move through a really large image, or have it feel, you were mentioning some of the things you could do with 3D as well.
Yeah, even just extending that out a little bit, that would be a design then issue, right? You add a couple more layers, you offset their deltas, and you create a parallax effect, and that would really start doing it. But the point is that Kinect gives you everything you need to then plug in and start giving that really rich 2.5D effect there from head positioning.
And one of the things to keep in mind, this builds on top of the Kinect SDK. So similar to before, we get a face track frame, and we call this .tracker.track, and we send in all the data. So we're going to send in the color image, the depth image, and the skeleton that we're looking to track. And if we are successful, we get the yaw, which is when we look left and right. And then we just do a translate transform, and that's just something built into WPF to move something left and right based on that. So no magic there. But what the last thing I want to show with this is you can also get the full mesh in a simple way, and it does kind of all the work for you. And we'll see. I don't know if you guys can see that mesh is on top of my head. It's ever so disturbing. So I have a mesh that's following around in my head, and I can do different things to different parts of my head based on that mesh. So
On that mesh, and again, just again to throw out, these sample apps, that one's in C#, so you don't need C++, you don't need XNA on this one. These samples are there. You get them when you get the developer toolkit when you download Connect. So the samples are there, great samples. On that mesh, again, it's another thing we've been waiting for quite some time, because it's creating those 3D points off your real data. So you can get all the points on the head, but getting a mesh just makes it that much easier than map it over and start doing character animations and stuff like that.
Okay, so let's go through some sound position stuff.
Well, we'll keep on that slide. So sound position, like we mentioned, the Connect has an array of microphones at the very front. So it's not just one. And that array starts giving us dimensionality with sound. So many of the demos that we see that get submitted to Coding for Fun, they go in, like so many projects, they all leverage the depth or the skeleton. We're not seeing that many right now that leverage sound, so we're really trying to put an emphasis on this because there's just so much potential in this device as well besides the depth camera. So two big things to kind of to level set here when we're talking about. There are two parameters we want to mention. One of them is the sound source angle. That means the Connect at any given time, whenever it's hearing sound, since it's hearing sound dimensionally, it's saying, I'm pretty sure that sound, that command came from over here, and I'll also give you a confidence level with that. So you can start clipping based on that confidence level. It says, I think it came from this guy right here, I'm 0.2% sure, right? So you can clip on that, it knows for sure. So sound source angle is something that you'd query to at any given time to say, who dat, right? Where'd that sound come from? The beam angle is something that you then get to direct to say, start listening specifically over here. So you can use these two in combination. If you have a lot of skeletons, somebody might say, the code, right, and we'll get to speech recognition, right? Connect lock on me. So it can do off the sound source angle and then adjust the beam angle to kind of point to it. So these two kind of work in parallel. You can definitely set them up to cascade that way in parallel. Sound source angle, where the sound's coming from. Beam angle, where you want to focus on. That's also good on clipping out, again, at the commercial level. You want to clip out a lot of ambient noise that way. So right off the bat, even with just one player or one user, it can be very helpful for clipping out ambient noise. Focus in on this direction, right? But one of the samples that comes, or you go to the next slide.
We'll just talk about this just from a quick perspective, just in terms of that amount of time, and making sure that we get to Bhaktimath.
Sure, very, very quick. So the sound angle gives you the directionality. It also comes with some very powerful speech recognition grammar. Like we said, with the EXE comes out, if you download the speech SDK, you get even more. There's two ways of doing grammar, as we see on the screen. The way on the right, doing it through code, that's kind of the simple way of doing it. Create a grammar, add words, and there you go. If you want to get more advanced, you can start bringing in a speech recognition grammar XML file, a grammar recognition XML. And here you start setting up things like rules, you start set up scopes. You see, for example, yes, please. You then do one ofs, which are lookup lexicons. You can say, this is one of several different ways that somebody might say something that means yes, please. They might say yes, yeah, yep, okay. And so you define it this way as an XML file. If you download the SDK, and you switch over to my app, if you download the SDK, the speech SDK, excuse me, you can then bring in speechgrammar.xml. For example, I do a quick search on phone. Oops, phone wasn't found because I'm on the wrong file, grammar recognition XML. There you go. So this very long grammar recognition XML is already set up for the most common types of words. So you get that right out of the box. For example, phone number.
Can we switch over to the right machine here? There we go.
Hey, there you go. That helps.
Yeah.
So you have this very long XML file, and it goes in through numbers. Even simple things you might not think about, like somebody wants to say their phone number. It's, 528 extension 325. How to get that speech recognition? We'll then hear that extension and then properly format it in the values that you want through converters, right, to be applicable.
Yeah, so it's a sample grammar, It's available, and you download it as SDK. So rather than you having to write and figure out all the different variations or permutations to say a phone number or how to say time, if you want to tell somebody the current time or when they're doing a deposit, we've done all the work of recognizing and building those grammars that you can then copy-paste into your application or modify.
Yeah. So on the screen, here's an example of an application that'll do both of them if I don't crash. We're waiting.
Stay on target.
Ooh. Cool. So this is an example that would use both speech recognition and using the beam angles and player angles. So this is a simple, everybody can see it? Let's start it up. So this is a voice-driven audio tic-tac-toe. So it'll find one skeleton. There's Dan. You'll be X. And then it finds a second player. I'll come in. It'll be
Aww.
O. Nice.
You look angelic, and I look demonic.
It's the suit. So we start off. Let's just start playing. Player X, so you say?
Let's go with 3.
7. Okay.
7.
Oh. 1.
9.
I concede.
No. All right. Finish this game.
For 6.
So here's an important.
I meant 6-8. Didn't work.
So when it's not your turn, it'll actually find where the angle is and not let you play. So if it's not his turn, I can't play for his, and he can't play for me. And 8 for the win. 8.
I said 2.
Oh.
8.
2.
8. That's all. So. You, again, go through this code, and you'll be able to see how they're able to calibrate. The Kinect says the skeleton is over in this position, and it can get the angle of the audio. So if that angle of the audio isn't matching up to the player, it's going to be able to ignore that. So that's a perfect example of how you'd be able to use skeletal dimensionality with audio dimensionality for good. Again, it's one of the samples in the Toolkit SDK. Amazing samples. I'm really, really happy with the Kinect team at 1.5 for the type of stuff that they did. Now they've really taken it up a notch, in my
opinion.
Okay.
So you want to spend a couple of minutes, and I do have the XNA avatiring example for you as well.
Sure. On joint orientation, I can talk joint orientation to BoxingBots UX actually if you want.
Oh yeah, that's a good point. So
let me switch this over.
There's a number of things to. Ooh, what's this? Oh, we start talking about BoxingBots.
let's see if I can drive here. Can you go up one?
That.
Okay, so one other thing, and probably the last big thing that I'm really excited about on 1.5, another thing I've been waiting for a long time for, coming from the agency space or interactive design space, is this joint orientation. So we haven't had this before, and now we do. So out of the 20 points, it's able to return a quaternion that actually gives you, or the matrix transform coordinates, the angle of the joint rotation. So all of a sudden now, the demo that they have, which is great, if there are any XNA developers in here, but... Okay, one guy back. Awesome for you. You're my kind of people. Or if you're a C++ programmer working with DirectX, a lot of the math is the same. If you're in this area, it is a very niche problem, but up until now it was a niche problem that was very hard to solve, right? Now Kinect Toolkit brings that for you. One example of kind of how it works. Thanks. The sample is in there in XNA. This is an example of where we could have used it when we were building the robots, because we built the robots. Sheldon and Howard, we built them. We got requested in January to be part of South by Southwest Interactive for the launch party with Frog Design, and we said, hey, we'll build 6-foot-tall boxing robots. Sure, no problem. We had no idea if we could pull it off. Clint down here, he's the hardware wizard who actually did virtually all of the hardware. From the design technology, I handled that. Brian Peake, who's not here, he handles all the messaging, right? The unsung heroes at TechEd. He's the guy.
Sure.
So the focus here, basically what happens, go to the next slide. The way this works out is you'll see in section A, every player stands in front of the interface. In section A, it's just the raw video feed coming in. We apply a pixel shader to it to add a kind of techie effect, because the theme was retro arcade, which is probably the only interface I've ever designed with a solar flare on it. Usually that's never a good sign of design. But this was 80s, so it was okay. So the video feed comes in section A. The depth data is then used in B to calibrate where you are in connection to the Kinect. So as you move forward or as you move back, that's kind of a top-down approach. So we can calculate top-down simply because we have depth data on your body and get you as a player. When we release the code, you'll also be able to go through there, and we'll be releasing the code very soon. We do some clever things with skeletal locking. If the person is driving an 800-pound boxing robot, you probably don't want anybody to easily come up behind them and hijack the skeleton and start doing whatever they want, you know, driving off with it. So there's some new features where you can create sticky skeletons and basically say, once you link onto this person, stay sticky on that person, right? So once we have the video data and we're doing the skeletal, the depth tracking on B, up in C is where we're doing this joint cloud. And in our case, we're using WPF 3D. So as you're moving your joints, before we had joint orientation, which is when we built this, it's moving those boxes in 3D space. So as you're moving, it'll be matching your body. But with joint orientation, this would give us an example so that as you turn your head or as you're turning your wrists, the boxes would have been facing the right way. So this is a perfect example of something that we weren't able to do simply because it had been too hard to do the math in the short time we had. Now that it comes in the toolkit, we pop it in, and that's exactly the type of scenarios where joint orientation is going to really, really come in handy if you're one of the designers in charge of that type of UX code.
Sure. And I think one quick thing that I just wanted to show was the Avateering demo.
Oh, you got that? Cool.
So here's... Nice. Here's just an X&A avatar, and you can imagine, you know, sort of the real-world example, and it gets some of the joints, and you can see actually on the depth camera what things are being cut off, and I can only see the top, so I can't actually click. But as I move my head around, and I get those orientations, so you can imagine kind of having different applications and uses for this. So kind of a fun demo to have a random body dance. Okay. So switching back, let's actually start getting things set up for boxing bots. So... Okay, so we have a theoretical working. So
we need this one?
We need two volunteers. Who wants to fight in front of people? And, you know, I think I see a red hat back there.
Wait, the guy who helped us out, our next intern, whoever yelled out in the...
Oh, yeah, actually, who's the other person that figured out the...
I think it was the guy here in the striped shirt.
Yeah,
he needs to come
get
up.
Get on up.
Let's get him up.
All right, how about a hand for these people? So I love a tech ed talk where somebody could actually get really, really hurt. So, so the people in the front, just so you know, Clint, do you need more help?
Does someone want to train someone on that robot?
Do you want me to train?
Why don't you go train? And in the meantime,
over here.
I'll entertain by showing.
Well, if I have a voice then, they can just hear the training.
Yeah, perfect.
Okay, cool. So this is locked in on a static UI. They'll be seeing a real UI. So Dan, you're going to be reffing. So lock to the skeletal lock. Oops, thanks. Way too close to the mic. Sorry about that, guys. So I'll be speaking in this direction, but I'm talking to you.
I can hear you from over here.
So are we reset? Can we do a lock?
See that little tiny
can you step back a little
speck in that crosshair.
There you go. Yeah. So you see that triangle right there?
Sure.
Yeah. Let me turn this down a little bit. Okay, so step back a little bit. Right there. This is you top down.
So while they're training, we can do a quick Q&A.
Okay, move.
While
so.
They're...
Whoa!
Sorry.
Who's that?
Hello? So move up, move
all
down.
Right.
Okay, so move back.
If folks have questions, we can take them while they're being trained. Anyone? Questions?
Is this the right
question here?
Good. Okay. So when it starts off, this
is there a difference in performance between C++ and C#?
Can you kill my mic?
Oh. Sure. What microphone is doing that? Sorry. I think there always is in terms of C++. So if you need, you know, pedal to the metal and you want to control bits and bytes, it's going to be not having, for example, a garbage collector is just as default be faster. So it always depends on where you want to make your trade-offs in terms of developer productivity. Wow, there's a WPF visualizer. I drag and drop, and I instantly have a skeleton control or other controls. So it really depends. But you can reliably get 30 frames per second regardless of the platform. So good question. Question here? Are we working on tracking eyeballs? So you can see, like, okay. All right. I'm sure somebody at Microsoft Research is. I don't know of a research, because there are actually eye tracking studies that do different things, and those are actually for when people use web pages. What are the things they actually look at? Like, do they actually look at that right nav for advertising? And I've seen those kind of studies. But the face tracking SDK right now doesn't track, say, the location of your eye. But that's certainly a known scenario that would be awesome for people to be able to know where somebody's looking at and make your eyes the cursor, if you will, as a classic example. So great question. There's a question in the left side. Yeah, so the question is whether there's progress on getting it integrated with Windows. I don't have anything I can actually say on that. But certainly I've seen some demos of people integrating using the touch APIs, where they're building a, if you're building a touch driver, you can actually build a touch driver and have it mapped to Kinect. So once you pass some space, you can have these be two touch points, if you will, and actually using that as touch points. So I have seen that. We actually do have a demo of just using it as a Kinect cursor. And that's at, I think it's kinectcursor.codeplex.com. And what we do is actually do WM send messages to your regular mouse cursor. So you're using your hand as a cursor. And we're using the scale, too, so you don't have to jump around. The challenge with that is it is kind of, I'd say, annoying when you have a non-touch optimized devices where you're, say, going start program, or you're in say, something like Word, where there's a bunch of menus and you have to be really precise. It can be kind of annoying. But those are probably the two examples that I've seen today.
So, Dan, I think the robots might be ready. Want to do one round, and then we can finish it. We can stay in the questions.
Okay, so we are ready to do a round. And the winner gets a Kinect for Windows sensor. So
we don't have to take it back home.
They're volunteered. Come on. All right, how many people want Blue to win? Blue, the guy that fixed our code? How about Red Hat representing Red over there?
Yeah. So one quick overview really quick. Both of these, they've been fighting during lunch breaks. And tomorrow and Thursday, we're also planning on it. And that's down on the conference floor. And the Project Detroit, the car, it's right behind the bookstore. So please check out both of those projects. They're both coding for fun.
Yeah,
really
yeah, yeah. Fight, fight, fight. Okay, move forward. Okay, slow. All right, way to go, guys.
Yes, nice.
Who gets fired?
Is there a reset? So we have these as ref mode. If we have to break them up, if they're moving the screen, if they become self-aware, for whatever reason, we need to override, we can step in here. But while the game's starting, huh?
Oh.
Well, I can come beat you up because I'm on Xbox. Right.
Now they're just doing via Xbox? All right.
Oh, right there. Hey, okay.
One of the issues we have, and we can talk about how this is built, is actually we have our own Wi-Fi hotspot. So it's been interfering with this one. So, and we tried to map ourselves to their network. We had our own private hotspot so people couldn't jump on and do things. But it
you guys
looks like there's
back.
Issues with that hotspot.
Yeah. Yeah. You guys come at lunchtime, and we'll set you up tomorrow to work on it. But give
thank you all for coming. We really appreciate it.
Hey, thanks a lot, guys.